Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, we start with a new poll, this one from Fox News, that backs up quite a bit of what we've been seeing in other polls, but it shows that Americans are very much dissatisfied with a lot of aspects of the Obama presidency. Overall, 42% approve of his performance, 53% disapprove. 31% only like his policies, 62% disagree with those policies, 74% still say it feels like the country's in a recession, only 27% think his economic policies have helped, and it's a pretty steep drop in some of these categories since the month right before the 2012 election. So it's good, I guess, for conservatives that more and more people are coming to the conclusion that these policies and his presidency overall have not been successful. The troubling part, of course, is that they didn't see that a month before the 2012 elections.
Yeah, I mean, a few things kind of jump out at me. These aren't unbelievably out of whack with previous numbers of the past year or so. One thing that jumps out is there kind of had been this sense that when Obama was reelected, well, okay, the economy is no longer a political issue. It was doing well enough for him to get reelected, so Americans are reasonably satisfied. Oh, by the way, for the past year, the stock market has been on this, you know, fantastic roll. I think the economy is still kind of the sleeper issue. And while Obamacare is going to be a, you know, big front and center discussion, and NSA spying, foreign policy crises are always, you know, potentially in the mix, I really feel like most people are going to go into the 2014 midterm elections in a pretty sour mood. Maybe there was enough of an uptick in the the economy in the late 2012 to save Obama's bacon in that one, that there'd be a lot of people who'd be really upset that 2013 for most Americans was not really a great year, unless they had a lot of money in the stock market, and that the early indicators for the beginning of this year aren't so great either. Lousy jobs numbers last month, GDP numbers aren't anything special. I mean, if you're one of the long-term unemployed, you're still in a very grim outlook right now. So I kind of feel like there's going to be, and you know, Obama's response is to the State of the Union about income inequality, and the Democrats are pushing a minimum wage hike. Well, we all know what a small percentage of the American workforce earns minimum wage, so they're offering solutions that are really kind of moot to most Americans. I think you can make the case that Obamacare is making it much harder to find full-time employment in this country compared to part-time employment. Places like Target are announcing that they're dropping their coverage for part-time workers. There's this big gloomy atmosphere about the economy, which is really, look, we're entering year six of the Obama presidency. This will have ramifications, I think, for the 2014 midterms, and that Obama will not be able to run around and say, hope and change, and, you know, do his usual routine. Obama's numbers are a little bit worse, and the number of people who say they like him personally but don't like his policies is up a good 7 points since the last time Fox asked this. I look at that, and I think a big chunk of that's got to be Obamacare, and I wonder how much of that is NSA over folks who are generally liberals but who are now appalled that everything they railed against, you know, John Ashcroft and the Bush administration for are now very much true now that we know because of the Snowden revelation. So bad news for Obama's polling numbers are good news for us. It's nice to see some people waking up and smelling the coffee and recognizing this. It is kind of frustrating, the timing of this. The entire Obama presidency may be seen as a giant national teachable moment, Greg.
Well, we certainly hope so. There have been a lot of teachable moments where the lesson has not apparently cracked through in large enough numbers. So on to martini number two now, and this from the Washington Free Beacon, but through CNN. It reads as follows. In an interview with CNN's Fareed Zakaria, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani forcefully asserted that Iran would not destroy its nuclear centrifuges under any circumstances. Rouhani's comments come just days after the U.S. and Iran began to implement a deal which the White House claims will scale back Iran's nuclear program. The Obama administration claims the goal of the deal is to prevent a nuclear Iran, yet Rouhani's comments show Iran views the deal much differently. Reacting to that position, Zakaria told CNN that Rouhani's comments struck him as a train wreck. And there was another interview on CNN, Jim, with Mohammad Zafir, the foreign minister, who says, absolutely point blank, we agreed to maximize enrichment at 5%, but we agreed to dismantle nothing. So dueling diplomacy here, and I'm not sure I'm confident that we're going to win this battle of the words.
What Zakaria is describing here isn't all that new or surprising. You know, when they first announced, you may recall, the Iranians said, this is great. They've said that we have to keep doing enrichment. And John Kerry said, no, that's not what the, you know. Then the Iranians said, well, we have a secret side deal that covers some of these issues. And the State Department said, no, which now saying that our partners in peace are lying. Several times during this alleged negotiations and implementing, the Iranians have, you know, we've said we've had an agreement. We say X and they say Y, and X and Y are directly contradictory. The problem is that as this administration gets more and more attached to the notion of the deal and this grand summit they're going to have and all this, the more willing to concede, I suspect, they get. Because basically, to come out and say, okay, the Iranians are not trustworthy, they break their word, they say they agree to X, and then they turn around and say the agreement really was for Y. When they do something like that, we can't trust them, and it just means that this entire process has been a giant waste. And remember, Obama's going back to 2007 was that, look, willingness to negotiate with our enemies is not a sign of weakness, it is a sign of strength. It can be, but I guess it all depends on what you agree on. And, you know, this deal that we've gotten with them, people have pointed out that all the concessions we've made are very hard to re-implement if they break their word. All of their concessions they've made, if they decide they want to back out of this deal, they just flick a switch and these centrifuges start turning again. They're not dismantling any of their equipment or anything like that. So it seems like a very bad deal, and it seems like the administration is getting more and more wedded to this bad deal. It's just easy to see a scenario in which they've already had a showdown with congressional Democrats over this, that in desperate pursuit of another Nobel Peace Prize, this administration drags the country kicking and screaming, including some surprisingly skeptical congressional Democrats, into a deal that ends up backfiring in our faces someday.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And we debated doing this one earlier in the week when the original part of this story first broke. But more has happened in the last 24 hours, so we're going to talk about it. And that is Richard Sherman, star cornerback, defensive back for the Seattle Seahawks, whose tipped ball on a late pass from San Francisco quarterback Colin Kaepernick towards Michael Crabtree. Had he caught it in the end zone, it would have been a touchdown. San Francisco would be going to the Super Bowl, but Sherman tipped it. His teammate intercepted it, and that was the end of the 49ers rally. Aaron Andrews of Fox News caught up with Richard Sherman right at the end of the game, and I think just about most of the country has heard this by now.
Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. I'm going to set it for you real quick.
Later on, Sherman said, that's not all of who I am. I do a lot of charity work. I ask my teammates. I'm a stand-up guy. A lot of people point out the fact that, of course, other star athletes, whether it's from Michael Jordan to LeBron James to Peyton Manning, to name your athlete in any sport, they seem to be able to give rational and coherent answers that aren't rage-filled at the end of the game, even after a tense situation. Then folks like the Huffington Post said, well, he comes from the inner city, and if you don't understand where he comes from, well, then you're just racially insensitive. And then Sherman added to the story yesterday by dismissing the word thug. Here's what he had to say about that.
The only reason it bothers me is because it seems like it's the accepted way of calling somebody the N-word nowadays. You know, it's like everybody else said the N-word, and then they say thug, and they're like, oh, that's fine. And that's where it's kind of, you know, it kind of takes me aback, and it's kind of disappointing because they know. What's the definition of a thug, really? You know, can a guy on a football field just talking to people, you know, maybe I'm talking loudly and doing something, you know, talking like I'm not supposed to, but I'm not, you know, there was a hockey game where they didn't even play hockey. They just threw the puck aside and started fighting. I saw that and I said, oh, man, I'm the thug?
Jim, I know we have slightly different approaches to this. You are not as alarmed as John Madden and some others on this. Go for it.
Sure, let me unpack this. First of all, I think the comparison of the term thug to the N-word is inflammatory. If this is the new rule amongst sports writers, we've decided that the term thug is a code word or something, then we need some sort of some socially acceptable term to say that someone is behaving in a manner that is overly aggressive and unsportsmanlike and jerky and things like that. And maybe jerk is the word we'll have to use from here on in. But, you know, I was thinking about, first of all, he doesn't swear in his post-game rant. If you listen to each one, what he's actually saying, and admittedly, he's, you know, screaming at the top of his lungs. So he's not at his most coherent and clear, but basically he's saying, I'm the best cornerback in the game. When you try to throw at Crabtree, he's not going to succeed, you know, and don't you talk about me. Now, I do love the correspondent who has to take the tone of the kindergarten teacher. Richard, who was talking about you? What did they say that hurt your feelings? Greg, we all know that, look, everyone wants to be the best. Everyone wants to compete. And whatever your field or profession, you have your top of the heap. And the Super Bowl is the championship. It is the pinnacle for professional football players. I know you guys are in the talk radio playoffs. We're in the magazine playoffs. And I got to tell you, the day I make the big play to take National Review to the magazine playoffs, I am going to trash talk like Richard Sherman on a 4-day bender or something like that. You know, like, he literally just made the play that sent his team to the Super Bowl. And so I can't begrudge the guy that much for his emotions running away from him. Also worth noting in there is that after that play, when it became very clear that the result of the play was that the Seahawks would win the game, he goes to Crabtree, and apparently they had him mic'd up for the NFL channel, and he goes to say to him, "Hell of a game." I mean, he seems to be, you know, trying to do good sportsmanship, and Crabtree shoves him in the face. Sherman might be a better sport, you know, have more good sportsmanship than we give him credit for. I don't really think there's anything that bad. Now, if he'd sworn a blue streak on national television or done something else, I could see people complaining more. But this just strikes me as just a lot of triumphant chest pounding, I am the greatest exuberance. And I don't think that's, you know, the worst thing. I will give a different opinion, though, Greg. I point out that I've just gotten a statement that players like Richard Sherman are ruining the image of the NFL and are a disgrace to the game. That has just come in from Aaron Hernandez, the former tight end for the New England Patriots. So Ray Lewis was also disappointed. You know, he said it just hit him like a knife to the heart to hear Sherman.
Oh, wow. So, wow.
I'll leave it to you for the counter argument.
Obviously, you see people afterwards in post-game interviews. I mentioned before that a lot of folks, I mean, Peyton Manning is incredibly analytical, Tom Brady the same way after the game. But if you look at folks like Jordan or LeBron James, guys who get hit game-winning jumpers, some are more subdued. Others are really, really excited. The weird part for me was that he wasn't exuberant. He wasn't joyful. He was hateful towards the guy that he beat on the play rather than the fact that his team was going to the Super Bowl. He never mentioned his team, never mentioned the fact that they were going to the Super Bowl. All he talked about was how he detested the player he'd been guarding all game. It was just kind of an odd juxtaposition to the jubilation in the stadium. He was still venting, and I would point out that in the confrontation with Crabtree, who did push him in the face, Sherman's the one who got flagged because he's got this reputation around the league as a trash talker, and the officials knew darn well that he wasn't there in a genuine act of good sportsmanship.
I would just wonder that. Imagine if he thought it was mad. Imagine how he'd feel if he'd lost the game. Anyway, my understanding is that Sherman has done a special interview with the Fox Sports Channel correspondent who was talking to him then, so it all seems to be square with them. I said with my Aaron Hernandez joke, I kind of feel like there are much worse problems in the NFL these days than somebody getting kind of, you know, carried away with himself in the post-game interview. Sherman is a Stanford grad, and he is, you know, it does seem like he's got a reasonably coherent head on his shoulders. I think his point about the hockey game is a fair point to make. I would cut him some slack. If it turns into a pattern of behavior on his part, then maybe the coaches or the organization needs to, or the league needs to step in, considering how the league will give you a $5,000 fine if you touch certain quarterbacks interrupting the throwing motion. I'm sure Commissioner Goodell will be right on top of this if he steps out of line.
Absolutely. No argument that there are plenty of thugs in other sports. Hockey certainly among them. There's no doubt about that. We'll see how this game goes. I think it's going to be a very good game. Hopefully the weather is good enough in New York that that won't be the determining factor. But we'll find out. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.